I think I'm probably the best salesperson in the UK, and it just blew up.
Did it?
Yeah.
Like, in what way? Give me an example.
Millions of pounds.
There must be people in the audience you employ who go, run to the back of the room to get people up and running to the back of the
Never.
Room. You promise, mate?
Everything's on the table. Yeah, I passionately sell my products. Yeah. Get over it.
I'm not testing you. I just want to know this business process, because there's lots of noise out there. Why is there so much controversy around you and Rob Moore in the property world?
I can't speak for Rob, because I don't know too much about Rob. Kicked his ass, knocked him down on the first round. He was on his knees like a little bitch. Oh, but I had a headache. I'm like, of course you had a headache. I smacked you in the head.
I think, mate, get off stage, mate. The way you are with it, some people buy into it. Me personally, I personally wouldn't buy into it.
I think but you would, though.
I don't think I would.
I think you would.
I don't think I would. Welcome to the Eventful Lives podcast. I'm your host, Dodge, and I'm the founder of Bournemouth Sevens, the world's largest sport and music festival. On this podcast, I speak to proper characters of all lived eventful lives. Do us a favour and hit that follow button, and be sure to check us out on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook and TikTok at Dodge Woodall, where we've now had over 100 million views. Samuel Leeds is a property developer and controversial YouTuber with over 400,000 subscribers. I get his thoughts on the £200,000 boxing match with property investor Rob Moore. We go in depth on his journey to becoming a self-made millionaire and go head-to-head on his controversial approach to selling his property courses. This is the eventful life of Mr. Samuel Leeds. Samuel, welcome to the show, mate.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Yeah, finally we made it.
We did. I got the wrong day last time. I was just like, literally, it was the summer, wasn't it? And I was enjoying sandbanks, and I messaged, I was like, hey, man, are you ready? You're like, what?
it was. Right, let's roll all the way back. Where did you grow up, and how did you become such a colourful and controversial property developer?
Well, I grew up in Warsaw, which probably didn't help me, because then when I got into the business world and all the etiquette, I didn't understand the etiquette at all. I had to have etiquette training about 3 years ago to learn basic things about knives and forks and how to sit and how to... So, grew up in Warsaw, which is near Birmingham, and failed in school, quite bad, always on the brink of getting expelled. Parents split up when I was 7 years old, and that was kind of like my background, and now I'm a property developer. Mm. I run a training
So when you said your parents split up at seven, who did you end up living with, your mum or your dad?
My mum.
Your mum, okay. Yeah. And what was school like for you at that time? You're saying you're getting close to getting expelled. What sort of personality were you at school?
Short attention span. And I went to, my mom's a Christian and I'm Christian as well, but she wanted to homeschool me because me and my brother or my sister, she just didn't like the way the schools were going. But instead of homeschooling me, it was like an in-between. She found this little Christian school where like a bunch of people had kind of come together. So there was only, I think about 15 kids. So I went into this little bubble of a school. So it was a school, but it kind of wasn't. It was kind of like a cross between homeschooled and an ordinary school. And yeah, it was just, I just didn't like it. I mean, there were all the kids were a bit strange. Probably I was the strangest, but it was just horrible. Yeah. You know, I didn't particularly enjoy it.
What was your personality like at school?
As I say, short attention span. So I didn't really, I couldn't focus. I used to get into trouble, bored, lethargic, a bit of a loser, wasn't particularly popular with boys or girls, didn't have any aspirations to be successful. Like if I'd have known how my life would have turned out, I wouldn't have, like I had no aspirations to get into property investment or to become a business owner. Just... Not particularly great.
So you're going through school. I can see that. What age were you when you had a spark in you going, right, I want to go and earn a pound note. I want to get into the property world.
Mm. It didn't really happen. I mean, I used to do paper rounds when I was like 14. Started doing like paper rounds and stuff like that. And I remember getting a little Bradford and Bingley book. And every day I'd like check my amount in it. And then when I was maybe 15, just turned 15, I remember I'd hit £1,000 and I felt quite proud of that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh man, £1,000 in my bank, you know, from paper rounds and stuff. Mm. And I showed it to my teacher. I just said, hey, you know, but look, that's my money. I was quite proud of it. Mm. And I thought she might be like, you know, because it's a Christian school. Oh, money's bad. You shouldn't be making money. But she didn't. She said to me, that's more money than I've got.
Mm.
And I think that kind of gave me a little bit of validation. Mm. Like, oh man, there is something I'm good at. Yeah, I'm not good at maths or English or science or chemistry or whatever, whatever, but I got more money than the teachers. Mm. That, I think that's the earliest memory. And then my mom got me a book by Richard Branson called Screw It, Let's Do It. Mm. And he's got ADHD, dyslexia, stuff like that, I think, as well. So that was like, oh, wow. That was kind of, oh, maybe I can get into business. So I think that was the earliest memory I can have where I actually had some kind of sense of maybe I'm good at something.
Yeah. And when did it come about when you made that first leap of getting your first property or any opportunities around? How old are you?
Well, I left school at 16. I got my first house at 17, but I was too young to actually buy it and get everything in my name. So my mom remarried when I was like a teenager. I think I was like 12, 13. So my mom's husband hosted the property in his name and said, in a few years, you can switch it over. Mm. So that was like my first investment. He didn't give me any money for it. He just said, hey, I'll host it, you know.
What do you mean host it? Who put the deposit down for it?
It was 100% financed by the bank.
Was it?
Yeah.
What year are we talking roughly?
That went through in March 24th, 2009.
2009.
Yeah. I was 17. Mm. It was like the month before I turned 18.
So he put it in his name and then switched it over to your name when you hit 18.
Well, that was the plan, but it just stayed in his name for a few years.
Okay.
But yeah.
And was that the first bit of business you thought, hold on a minute, I can earn a good
pound? Yeah. Yeah, because that house, I rented it out room by room and that paid me like $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
Which was like, what? Crazy. Mm. You know, so that was the first, you know, like taste.
And what was your journey after that then? Was there anyone, did you have a mentor? I know you said you didn't have a fatherly figure.
Well, I did have a father. My parents split when I was 7. I lived with my mom, but I still saw my dad.
Okay.
In fact, my dad made me work for him.
Was he a good mentor to you, your dad?
Yes, in one sense. Like he taught me about business and being in, you know, he was a magician. So he used to do parties.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Quality.
Yeah.
Did you get into doing any magic?
I was forced to.
Yeah.
I wanted to be a doctor, but he made me be a magician instead.
Quality.
Now he made me.
Yeah.
He made me.
What sort of magic did he do? What sort of magic did he teach you?
So he used to do like card tricks and children's shows, discos, not just magic. We did the full works, discos, balloon making, everything. That was my job.
Yeah. For how long?
3 months.
Did you enjoy it?
Nope.
No.
And then when I got that first house, that paid the same as working for my dad.
Without having to do much work.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so how did you roll on from there then? What did your journey, how did your journey go from having that first property?
So I had that first property. Then I was like, man, I just need to do this again and again and again. But you couldn't do it because the 2009, the prices were crashing. Yeah. Lenders were getting really risk averse. So then I started doing property, but in a more creative way. So for instance, I would buy a house, but I would agree to pay for it in 5 years.
You'd buy a house and you agree to pay for it in 5 years. Yeah. Go on.
Well, let's say, bear in mind now it's 2009.
Yeah.
Let's say you bought a house in 2000. I'll tell you my first one.
Yeah, tell me.
So my first one was in Bloxwich. The guy's name was Steve. He bought it in 2007. He bought it for $95,000. He's got a big mortgage on it because he bought it in 2007 when banks were lending out loads of money.
Yeah.
Now, the value of the house has dropped, but the mortgage is still high.
Okay.
So he's in negative equity. Mm. Now, he's got bad tenants trashing it. Now he wants to sell, but he can't sell because he's in negative equity. Mm. So I'll say to him, I'll buy it in 7 years for the price you want, but I'll pay you in 7 years.
How much did he want?
He wanted 81,000.
81.
Because that was the price of his mortgage.
Did you get it 81?
Yes.
Okay. So how did you get it? How did you then pay him back in 5 or 7 years?
Because I've got the option to buy it for 81.
Yeah.
Over 7 years. But then the mortgage payments are 145, but I rented it for 550.
Mm, okay.
So I'm saving up that £300-400 a month, being super disciplined, locking it away. And then after 7 years, that $30,000 now can buy the house. That's the deposit.
Yeah.
But by the time I bought the house, obviously it's more than 81 now. Mm. So I had a lot of those.
Yeah. Fair play. And how did you grow your business then? So did you get into property training courses?
That was way later.
Or later on?
Way later. Okay. Yeah.
So what year are we talking that we'll be at now then when you got your first property?
2009.
And tell me your journey from 2009 to sort of like 2015, 2016 in the property world.
So the training started 2016.
Yeah.
So from 2009 to 2016. So the first couple of years of going into property was getting lease option agreements. I bought that house that I told you about. I was also controlling, but I set up like a management company. So I'd manage people's properties. So I was making a living. I was doing okay.
Who taught you all of this?
I went on a few property courses.
Oh, so you went on other people's courses to find out how to do it?
Yeah.
Whose courses were they?
I went on many, many courses, but...
Are there any that stand out?
Yeah. Simon Zushi.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of him.
I know Simon Zushi, yeah.
Yeah, I went on his
course. I had a nightclub up in Birmingham, and he got me into this club. We had that for about 3 years, throwing parties there. Yeah, Simon Zushi.
So he knows me super well.
He's got blonde
hair. Yeah. I tell you a story about Simon. When I was 17, just before I bought my first house, I hadn't even bought the house yet. I'd found it.
Yeah.
I'd negotiated it, but I was thinking, I'm too young. Simon phoned me up, and I was a teenager living with my mom, and he's a multimillionaire, spent 45 minutes with me on the phone, putting together a plan and helping me get my first house.
Quality.
So respect to Simon.
Yeah, massive. And this is like 20 years ago when I had that. I had a nightclub, it's called DNA, 2,700 people. And Simon called me up and said, you want it? How weird's that?
Yeah.
I haven't even thought about that bloke for 21, 22 years.
Yeah.
Amazing. And so you learned how to do what you're doing now by Simon.
Not just Simon. I went on many courses. Well, for a start, Simon was one of my mentors. I also had a guy called Tony Crook, who I met at BNI, who's a business.
What's BNI?
BNI Business Networking International.
Yeah.
So he helped me. Doug Dawberry, from Executive Training Consultancy. Like, I was paying thousands to these guys, even though I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things people judged me for at the time, because people will happily spend 20, 30 grand going to uni.
Yeah.
And that's cool. But when I was doing this, my friends and family were going mad, because they're like, why are you spending thousands of pounds learning from Simon Zushi?
Yeah.
Is he going to give you an accreditation at the end of it? Are you going to get something from the government backed? No. Doug Dawberry, all these people, who are these guys? Mm. They're not backed by the government. You're not going to get a degree. You're not going to get anything, any accredited certification. Mm. So that was the judgment I was having from my friends and family at the time. But how I saw it was, you're spending 30 grand to get a degree to help you get a job. I don't want a job. I want to be in business.
Yeah.
And if I go to uni to learn business, I want to be learning from a dude who's not in business.
Yeah. And people teaching business at university aren't in business.
No, they're on 30 grand a year.
Yeah.
So you're paying 30 grand to learn from a guy
who's reading from a book written 20 years ago.
Yeah. Who don't know nothing about marketing.
Yeah, I hear you.
You don't know anything about brand. But people, the judgment I got from that, from my friends and family, like, I was the laughing stock, you know. It's like, what are you doing?
Mm. How did that make you feel at that age? Because if you are 17, 18, you're not going to be fully secure in yourself. You're not going to be fully mentally strong. It's going to be, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the wrong thing? Mm-hmm. Did you know in your heart of hearts you're doing the right thing?
No, I felt embarrassed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember my cousin saying to me in the public environment, I was 17. He said, and I was in a suit. I don't even remember why I met him now, but a brief meeting, we had a brief thing, and I was in a suit, and he looked at me and he said publicly in front of people, he goes, so when are you going to actually go get a proper job?
Mm.
You know, and I felt embarrassed. Mm. Now I'd have a million answers.
Mm.
But at the time I was just a bit like, oh, how awkward. I was embarrassed for sure.
So what did you learn from these courses? What are the three big things you learned from these courses?
Well, I learned about the basics of property investment, how to find good deals.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. I learned that the marketplace doesn't discriminate. People do, because I had a chip on my shoulder about being young and uneducated and whatnot. But actually, if you're good at what you do, you're going to be able to make money.
Mm.
Because people might be racist, people might be prejudiced, people might be ageist, but the marketplace isn't. Mm. And I learned how to sell. I'm probably the best salesperson in the UK. No one can sell like me.
That's a bold statement.
Well, I mean,
I'll give you a run for the money.
Maybe. It's hard. How do you define it is interesting, but I'm very good at sales.
Yeah.
And I think everything in business is around sales.
Well, everything, the whole world revolves around sales.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sales is
and marketing. I think if you know how to sell,
yeah,
and you can promote and you can market, you've got that in the locker. You can get a job anywhere, or you can create your own business 100%. Anywhere. Totally 100%. Agree. So tell me your journey through that then. How many properties did you start building up? Are you a property developer? Are you buy, let, sell, do up, knock down houses?
Yeah, so I wasn't a property developer until sort of like much later. I was, I guess you could say a property investor, but also mainly a property entrepreneur. Because a lot of what I was doing was about managing properties. I was also finding property deals and I was packaging them.
Flipping them.
And not even quite flipping them, introducing them to investors. Because I didn't have the money or the resources to be able to buy it, do it up, sell it. But I do have the resources and the knowledge to find it, introduce it, and say, hey, I've got this deal. Sign this non-disclosure agreement and I'll show it you. And then you've got 1 hour to make up your mind.
Yeah. What was your movement then from 2011 to 2016?
My church kicked me out in 2011.
Were you happy with that?
No. I was upset. But I was basically asked to leave my church.
Why?
Because...
There's got to be something deeper than just going, you're earning money, you got to leave.
The reason that they gave was...
Did you try to buy the church? Rent it back to them. Yeah. Now you see it, now you don't. The magicians see it.
The reason that they gave for kicking out of church was, the actual reason that they gave was that I was overzealous and lacked wisdom. That was their reason. I was 20.
Do you think they were right?
Well, I was definitely overzealous and lacked wisdom, but is that a reason to... kick you out of a church? I don't know.
I haven't got a clue either.
I don't even know what overzealous means. Zealous is passion. How can you be overpassionate? I don't know. But I went to Bible college for 3 years, 6 days a week, and I studied. I did my dissertation in biblical economics, so I studied money from the Bible and grappled with the idea of being a Christian and also being a business person. And when I left Bible college, I became a millionaire within 2 years because I was so released from the guilt of making money. I realized actually the more money I make, the more I can help people, the more freedom I'll have. You can't serve God and money, but you can serve God through money because money is just a tool, you know? So
you said you become a millionaire. How did you become a millionaire?
Deal sourcing, packaging and selling deals to investors.
What does a millionaire mean to you? Because
it's very clear.
It is clear to you, is it? Because you can ask this question to 20 people and you'll get 20 different answers.
Well, 19 will be wrong.
Yeah.
A millionaire is very simple. It's where if you add up everything you own and take away all of your debts and everything you owe, whatever's left is your net worth. If your net worth is less than £1 million, you enter millionaire. You might have £1 million worth of property, but if you've got mortgages on them.
Absolutely.
So I was a property millionaire. I had over £1 million portfolio way before then, but I didn't become a cash net millionaire till I was 25.
So your version of a cash net millionaire is £1 million in the bank as well as your property.
It's £1 million net.
Yeah.
So if you've got a property worth 100,000, but you've got a 90 grand mortgage, that's 10 grand. Let's keep going until we get to a million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was that? What was the movement after that then? You become a millionaire. How did you grow your business? And what made you want to go and set up courses?
Well, when I became a millionaire and when I left Bible College, I also, in 2014, I set up something called Training Kings, which was a Christian business networking group. And I set that up specifically for people that were from the churches because I wanted to tell them the message of, hey, if you're an entrepreneur and you're in the church and you're feeling guilty, let's meet.
Yeah.
Let's come together. Let's help each other. Not only practically and with training, but also morally and support. And I wanted to create something because there's so many people in the churches that are business people that are banged over the head and told, you should be on the Sunday school.
Yeah.
Rather than being released into the marketplace to be good, compassionate entrepreneurs. So I set this group up, which went nationwide. I had 14 branches across the UK. I had full-time staff and everything. Lost a lot of money doing it, but I never intended for it to be profitable. It was literally just, I wanted to run a network to train, to support people, like-minded people. It wasn't even limited just to Christians. We had Muslims and Sikhs, and we even had people that weren't religious at all that just vibed. And were like, you know what? I'm not, they would even say, I'm not Christian, but I want to make money and I want to help people and I want to be, so I just seemed to attract these types of people. So we had 14 branches all across the UK. And then my business mentor said to me, Tony Crook said to me, this isn't sustainable. You're losing $4,000 a month putting on all these events. You need to charge these people to be part of the network. And I'm like, I can't really charge them anymore. We were charging them like £40 a month membership and they could go to unlimited network, 14 groups across the UK. So I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. How about this? How about I'll start putting on courses around marketing, sales, business, property investment, and then people from within the organization can pay a couple hundred pounds to come to one of the additional bonus events. So I did a marketing course, sales course, all these different courses, but property was just the one that was the most popular, that I loved the most. And then in 2016, after a couple of years, I just thought, you know what? I'm going to set up a business specifically for property training because I believe in doing what works.
What was that business called in 2016?
It didn't have a name. Okay. Well, obviously it did because it was registered at Companies House, but it was just called Samuel Leeds Limited.
Okay. No, not the company name, but what was the actual brand called?
It didn't have one.
It didn't have a brand. Nope. So how were you promoting? What were you promoting?
The website was property-investors.co.uk.
Okay.
It was Samuel Leeds Limited, and it
so
was just...
Property Investors was the brand, really, even though you had a website. You were putting on an events at different places as Property Investors.
I don't know what the brand was. The brand was me.
Yeah.
Just like, you want to learn from me.
Yeah.
And you want to see what I've done and how I've done it. Come and spend a day. That was it. And then people would pay. And it just blew up.
Did it?
Yeah.
Like... In what way? Give me an example.
Millions of pounds. Just...
What, millions of pounds of turnover? People paying to come onto your courses?
Yes. It blew up, bro.
How quick? Give me an example. 2016. How many events did you do in 2016?
Well, there's turnover and there's profit.
Yep.
I didn't make any money for 4 years doing training.
From 2016?
From my Training Kings days.
Okay.
So from 2014, 2015, 2016, even 2017, there was barely any.
Yeah.
There's barely any profit.
And then you flipped it over to a full-on business.
2016, the training business became a full-on business. Yep. But this is what people don't understand. Starting a business is hard and it's slow.
Yep.
It takes time. So
you have to be aggressively patient.
Right.
And if you can become aggressively patient in business, whether you're setting up a podcast, whether you're setting up a festival, right, whatever we do, I do, whatever you do, if you can get that skill set under your belt and know it's going to take 1,000 days to break the back of something, you're away. But a lot of people give up too early.
My brother tried to make me quit the training in 2018. 2018, I teamed up with my brother. And at the time—
And what year was that for you?
This was 2018.
Yeah, no, but what number year on your business journey?
Oh, maybe 9 years.
No, on the business of doing the training course.
2 years.
2 years, okay.
Yeah. And he was like, because I was doing deal sourcing, I had a letting agency, I had a project management company, I had my property investment business, I also started just doing my property development and commercial property. Training Kings. I was then also on top of the Training Kings. I was running now my property training. He was just like, we're only allowed to keep two. We can't be doing all these businesses because it's too confusing. And to be fair, my brother, he'd done quite well in business. My dad had left, gone to Brazil. He'd ran with the entertainment stuff. He had hundreds of entertainers. He'd made a success of the magician stuff. So when we teamed up in 2018, I was like, okay, well, which ones do we keep? And he wanted to get rid of the training because he said that it was, you don't have lifetime value of customers.
Yep.
They'll buy a course and then that's it. And it's too focused on me. You can't really systemize it. So he wanted to focus on the deal sourcing instead because that's a bit more lifelong.
What do you mean by deal sourcing?
Deal sourcing is where you introduce properties to investors.
Yep.
Because these investors, we had a list of investors, a few hundred, that were just buying deals again and again, every 6-12 months, just keep buying. That was making about £30,000 a month. So he was like, let's focus on that.
Net profit?
Turnover. But the overheads were quite low.
Were you working on 10%, 20%?
No. More like the other way around, like 90%.
Okay.
Yeah. Because that...
So you didn't have many staff and stuff. It was just literally you sourcing.
One member of staff at the time.
Yep.
Yeah. So he wanted to focus on that. But in the end, we sold most of the businesses, but we kept the property training. And we kept the property, obviously the investing and the development. We kept that. So I've since gone into other businesses, but that was the main focus. And then we blew up. 2018, 2019, we blew up massive.
Give me an example what you mean by blow up.
I mean like 1,000 people in a room every week to come see you.
How much a ticket?
Oh, no, not much. Like, maybe £1.
So you're going to get 1,000 people in a hotel room giving you a quid.
Yeah.
You got all your overheads.
Yeah, it's a loss leader. It's a loss leader.
So what were you doing to sell to get money for those 1,000 people? How does it work?
Okay, so I'd run there'd be 1,000 people there.
And what were you doing on the main stage, chatting?
All day on stage, teaching, condensing everything I know about property into a day. And at the end of the day saying, if you want to learn from me and do more, I've got this mentorship, I've got this advanced program, blah, 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 blah. And then a percentage of them would buy, maybe more like £1,000, £2,000. And then that then subsidized the cost of the hotel room.
Okay.
So now you're at break even.
Yep.
But then you've got like an inner circle mastermind, which is at the back end of the back end. And that's where the money is.
Is this the shows when you're on stage, people on stage, and you go right after 10 hours of chatting, getting people on board, and then people go up the back of the room.
Yeah.
They sign up for $2,000.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I've seen a couple of these.
Yeah, but I'm the best.
Are these the ones where you'd be on stage going, and it's not $10,000, it's not $7,000, it's not $5,000, it's $2,000. It's like selling sausages at a marketplace. Do you not think it's a bit muggy?
Not really, no. I think it depends how you do it. So there's a few rules. The first rule is you can't lie.
Yeah.
So you can't say, you know, oh, normally it's $20,000, but for you today, it's just going to be $1,000. You can't do that.
So how do you do it then?
How I do it is I actually don't knock down the price. Mm. I give away bonuses. So what I do is I'll say that I've got this program, which is $2,000. This is what you get, blah, 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 blah. We've also got an online version. We've got this, 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 blah, 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 and create a stack.
Mm.
And then if I'm doing an offer, which I always do, if you come to one of my £1 events, I'm going to make an offer.
Yeah.
And my offer is going to be, for anyone that registers for this, you'll get this for free, this for free, this for free, this for free.
So do you not feel that there are people in there who are coming for a quid going,
yeah,
do you know what? I could become a millionaire if I follow what Samuel Leeds does. This could be amazing. I could earn $100,000 a year. And my name's Karen and I've got 2 kids and I work at the supermarket. I'm going to pay a quid and spend a day out of my life there.
Mm.
And then they're so mesmerized in it and caught up in the sales chat that at the end of it, they get the end of going to the back of the room and sign up for $2,000.
I don't think so. Firstly, all of our advanced training is on the website.
Yeah.
So when they come for a pound, that they know that there's going to be advanced training. Secondly, there's a ton of value on that day.
Mm.
The sales pitch is like 20 minutes and it's a full long day with me.
Yeah.
It's not like I just have some of my trainers and then I quickly come on and do a sale. Like, I went to Robert Kiyosaki's program when I was a teenager. I was like, oh man, I'm gonna get to meet Robert Kiyosaki. I got there. He wasn't there.
Mm.
It was just a big long sales pitch. I went down to see Grant Cardone, Gary Vaynerchuk, Tony Robbins. They ain't there. So when these guys are paying a quid, I'm there all day. So if you come just for a pound and spend the day and you learn and you get all the information and you leave and it's bettered you in some way and you've enjoyed it, you've done a bit of networking, you've seen me, we grabbed a photo, awesome.
Mm.
Of course, I'm going to sell my product and I'm going to sell it the best I possibly can sell it in the most attractive way, in the most compelling way I possibly can. I'm going to do that ethically and I'm going to use stats. I'm going to show people what's what. Do I think it's muggy to be passionate about your product and to sell it? No, I don't think it's muggy at all. I think
what's muggy
is not to deliver.
That's number one.
Yeah.
Is not deliver.
Yeah.
Number one for me, mug is someone's on stage going, it's $10,000. It's not $10,000 today. It's not $6,000 today. It's not $4,000 today. It's $2,000. Get yourself to the back of the room. It's the best. You're going to have a lot of Karens and Sharons and Collins in there just going, oh, okay, I'll go to the back of the room and sign up. There must be people in the audience who you employ who go, run to the back of the room to get people up and running to the back of the
room.
You promise me?
I promise.
So you've never plotted people, members of staff, to say, when we say that $2,000, get to the back of the room, when you see 8 people get up straight away and run to the back of the room as if like it's the last packet of chips.
I've never, ever, ever, ever done that. And I would never have to do it.
Would any of your staff do that?
No. And none of my staff sell from stage anyway. Well, apart from one guy, but no. Because that's not, if they're my staff, they're following what I've trained them to do.
Mm.
Why would I get someone to, no. I wouldn't have to do that because the offer's good. People want it. People sit there, they hear my offer and they go, yeah, that's a good offer. And they register. I'm not going to try and have trickery or no, I've never done it and I never would.
Have you ever, you being older now,
yeah.
and you know when you get older in business, you get more wiser and you understand a bit more. When you're doing these courses and earning, getting the £1 million and the £2 million, there must have been moments you look back on and go, you know what, that was a bit cringe what I did there. Was there anything that springs to mind?
Yeah, I mean, even if I look back on my YouTube channel at the first videos that I did, I think it's cringy watching myself. Not because I'm doing anything wrong, but because I was bad at it, you know. I'm sure if you watch your first interview that you ever did on your podcast, you'll watch it and you'll be like, actually, that was a bit rubbish. So in that way, yes. Do I look back and cringe because I did anything that was like immoral? Absolutely not. I started my training business from the heart of Christian business networking, not I want to try and do this to make money. I didn't make money for years doing training. I lost money year after year.
I totally see your business model. See your business model. I get it. I just think that people can get clawed into something they weren't knowing they were going to get clawed into. I also understand if someone's parting with £2,000, it's up to them. They're an adult. They're going to part with £2,000. It's your choice.
And listen, if someone's, oh my gosh, I'm so regretful. I just got home and I wished I hadn't, then we'll refund them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
what would happen if someone hasn't got the money to pay on the day? What would any of your sales staff do?
It's a good question. If they haven't got the money for it, then we would downsell them onto a cheaper product. So in other words, let's say we've got a £2,000 offer and they say, I can't afford it, I haven't got £2,000. Then they'll say, okay, what do you have? Oh, you got £10? Maybe you should read this book. Oh, you've only got, you got £500? Okay, maybe we've got this online thing. So that's generally what the sales guys would do. Assuming that the person wanted or needed it. I mean, I teach sales.
Yeah.
I'm good at sales.
Sales guys, were they on commission?
Yes.
So you know they're going to drive and get these deals over the line for people going to the back of the room.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I've done the sale, they're not on commission. But if they do the work, then they get commission.
How do you know, like, you're saying on stage, it's me.
Yeah.
I'm the main person. If people are going to buy into me, they're going to buy into me. How do you know what your sales staff are? How do you know that how your sales staff are acting to people to squeeze people to get the money out of their bank account straight away, to swipe that card and go, right, the money's in the bank.
Yeah.
There's your pamphlet. There's your book. There's your video. And we'll be in contact with you soon.
Well, because we'd get complaints. So if we had a lot of people complaining after the sale, oh my gosh, I signed up. I wish I hadn't. Okay, let's have a discussion. Who was it that sold to you? Oh, it was Stephen. Oh, what did he say? All right, Stephen, there's a common denominator. You know, all of our staff, especially our salespeople, are recorded as well. Not at the events, because that's a bit hectic, trying to wire them up, but like phones and stuff, they're recorded. They're trained well. We have a philosophy in our business, which is we want to create raving fans.
Yeah.
There's got to be a culture within a company. The culture within our company is not, let's try and squeeze every penny and make as much money as possible. The culture is, we want to create raving fans.
Yeah.
We want to train people up. We want to help them become successful in property. If someone comes and says, I can't afford I'm absolutely skint. I haven't got any money. I've maybe could borrow a couple hundred pound off my friends or family. We'd say, well, maybe come back in 6 months. We're not trying to, you know, now I'm not saying every single person from our company always thinks and feels that way, but that's the culture. That's the way they're trained. And that's generally the way that they behave.
Have you had knock-on effects of people complaining?
Very few. Very few. I mean, I'm not saying we've never had any complaints ever, but we haven't really.
What sort of complaints would people come back with, do you think? Or have done?
Customers, you mean? Yeah. Or you just mean trolls? Or
No. Just people who have gone and bought the course and gone, oh, I was sold something and I want my money back, or I didn't get my money back and I've parted with £10,000. Or have you had any of them?
I'm not going to say we've never had any, but I will say it's very rare, because as a company, we're very reasonable. So if somebody's unhappy, we will put it right.
Yeah.
You know? So, and also, we're always learning and improving and making our training and our products better.
Mm.
So yeah, I mean, if you spoke to all of our current customers that are on our training and whatever,
yeah,
and said to them, "How's it going? How do you guys feel? Do you guys want a refund, by the way?"
Yeah.
They'd be like, "No, we're loving it. It's incredible."
No, respect you there, because I've seen the reviews. The reviews you've got on there on Trustpilot are absolutely fabulous.
Yeah,
but going through any type of business, you make mistakes.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, and what I'm intrigued to find out is when you had that reporter, undercover reporter coming in and filming
you. We've had that many times.
You've had that many times.
Yeah.
How did that make you feel and what did they find out?
I think the media are biased, you know. So we've had quite a lot of articles in the newspapers and shows and stuff like that. Also, interestingly, bad news travels faster than good news.
Yeah.
I've been in the newspapers, national newspapers, and on TV and whatever, countless times, like hundreds of times I've been in the papers, and there might be 1% that have been negative, and everyone remembers the negative. Mm. Didn't you have a story 5 years ago that was negative? What the heck, man? Yeah, but since then, I've had 1,000 positive.
Yeah.
And it's the same with reviews. You know, you can look at reviews. You can see I've got thousands and thousands of reviews, and over 90% of them are genuine, positive, happy customers.
Yeah.
You can look at the one or the two that weren't happy.
Yeah.
You can't please everybody all the time.
How does it make you feel when you know there's an undercover reporter in there? That lady who did the BBC undercover report, and she had a film, and then she went up to ran to the back of the room and signed up. Then they tried to upsell her for $10,000, and she said, I'm skint, I can't afford it. How does that make you feel as a business owner? When you hear the pressure they're being put under sign up.
It's good. Because I like to live my whole life as if it's always being reported on. Every time I'm running an event, I even say this to all the staff. We need to act like everyone in the room is a journalist.
Yeah.
That's how we got to act. Mm. Doing what we would in public and in private, same. So I'm not perfect, Dodge.
Mm.
I am not a perfect human being, but I'd like to think that I've got nothing to hide. Everything's on the table. Yeah, I passionately sell my products.
Yeah.
Get over it.
Yeah.
So does the man on the market saying, £1 fish. Mm. Come and have a look, £1 fish. You're going to go and do a report on him?
Yeah.
I'm running a £1 course. It's a loss leader. Mm. Then I'm going to sell. Mm. Get over it.
Mm.
We're all adults. Everyone's an adult in the room. Every time I sell, I always say, this is not a promise. This is a process. This is not a guarantee. Mm. This is an opportunity. This is going to be hard work. So, yeah, man. Come report.
Mm.
Come. I have no problem.
Mm.
I welcome them.
Someone signs up for $2,000. What are they actually getting for that $2,000?
So they're getting advanced training with me in person for around 4 days.
Give me an example.
Yeah, in a room, in a hotel room, the Thistle Hotel at Heathrow, with myself, a group of people, watching me on the phones, hearing what I say. So what I'll do is I'll be like, let's say we're on a course about HMOs. I'll say, right, here's how you find a HMO. I'll find it on stage. I'll ring the agent.
HMO, housing?
House of Multiple Occupancy. Yep. Or the course might be about packaging and selling deals.
Yeah.
So here's what I'll do. Spend 4 days with me. I'll say, listen, let's find a deal. We'll find a deal. We'll source a deal. I'll ring up the agent. Someone will go out and view it. Bang, bang, bang. All live, like you in my office. Then I'll package it. I'll email it out to my investors. My investors will start calling me. I'll take the call while I'm there in front of all these people. I'll sell. They'll watch me sell. Then I'll say, now you go do it. And we'll just spend 4 days together doing the do of property. Also, I've got 10 mentors out in the foyer.
So this is for $2,000. This is the free course they get. Or do they have to pay for that course?
So the free course is just 1 day. So that's not really a day of like...
So for that $2,000, what do they get?
Okay.
So 2 G's. If I come up to you, I want to learn what you're doing. Sam, there's $2,000 cash. Yeah. Now, what do I get?
Okay,
what are you giving me that day? Where
First
am I going?
You're going to get contracts. So you want to package and sell deals to investors. You're going to get contracts worth $2,000. So your $2,000... has been well spent on getting your terms and conditions, your sourcing, your non-disclosure agreements. So there you go. There's your $2,000. That's good on its own.
Mm.
But on top of that, you're also going to get 4 days in person with me, a multimillionaire, watching me sell. You're going to get 10 mentors out for the entire week where you can go and have unlimited sessions. Let them look at your deal, package it. you're going to get online training, which gives the A to Z of how to package and sell deals, how to find the deals, what the scripts, what to say, lifetime access. This is all part of what you'll get for two.
So for that two Gs, I'm getting all of that.
Yeah.
And then out of that 4 days you're doing at Heathrow, I'm only getting 1 day. Or I'm getting the whole 4 days part of that $2,000.
So you're coming and spending a day with me for a pound, where I'm just going to teach all the basics, meet me, have a handshake, have a selfie, whatever.
Yep.
Then you're going to invest another $2,000 if you want.
Yep.
If we gel. If you don't like me, then cool. You go home and you tell your story. You like me, we get on, we gel. Then you invest $2,000. Then we spend a week together and you get mentors, one-on-one. We sit down with you. You get your contracts, you get your courses, and.
So for that $2,000, they get a week now, not 4 days.
Well, I mean, there's a bit of pre-work to do, homework, stuff like that. 4 days with me.
Yeah. So personally with you, or do you turn up for one of the days?
I'm there the whole time.
The whole time.
Well, I mean, I'll do 75, 80% of the training.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And they're learning everything you need to know about selling.
Correct.
And what are you teaching them? You're trying to teach them financial freedom.
Depends on what course they take.
Okay.
If they take, it's practical. If they take a course on packaging and selling deals, then they're going to get the A to Z of that.
Yeah.
If they go on a course learning about property development, then obviously the content will be different, but they'll still get the same value.
Mm. So when they do the £1 thing,
1,000
people in the room, £1, get them to the back of the room, $2,000. There's an upsell as well from that $2,000, isn't there?
Well, bear in mind.
There's a $10,000, isn't there?
Yeah, but bear in mind, right now,
I've
made nothing.
Mm. No, I hear you. I'm not testing you. I just want to know this business process, because there's lots of noise out there.
Yeah.
There's people who really like you and there's people who don't like you.
Yeah,
your Marmite. I just want to dig down to find out the actual facts of a person who's not in this world.
Yeah, it makes sense. There's three levels.
Okay.
And all of this as well, because sometimes what people do is they'll try and reel you in. Whereas with me, I talk about it on every YouTube video pretty much. It's all on the website. The price lists are there.
Yeah.
There's no trying to trick anybody, it's all there.
So it's all transparent. So what is it then? £1, $2,000. Then what are the other two?
Okay. No. There's three levels.
Yeah.
The first level is all the free stuff / £1.
Yeah.
So basically free. All the free stuff. Then there's all the $2,000 courses.
Yep.
Then there's the academy. And the academy is 12-month mentorship.
Okay. How much is that?
$12,000.
Okay. So $1,000 a month.
Well, they pay up front.
What they pay up front, do they? Yeah. And what do they get for that $12,000 course?
Oh, mate. Ridiculous levels of everything. They get unlimited mentoring anytime they want, with not just myself, but also our mentors. They get a weekly mastermind call with me where we sit on there for an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yep.
They get...
As a group?
Yeah.
Okay.
They get... we look at their deals. So every time they look at a property and they want us to review it, they send it to us. We rate it out of 100. We quote all their refurbs. If they've got a property they're looking at and it needs a refurb, they send it to us. We've got a full-time builder that will give them a quote, tell them how much it is. We have parties. We have networking events constantly. Every month, we put a nice three-course dinner on in Heathrow. We have little clusters of networks all across the country they can go to. We have loads of training. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like the full, that's why they're all raving fans.
That's the full package. Yeah. Is there another level from the $12,000?
No.
You just keep it at the 12 Gs for everyone.
I mean, I could vary, a lot of my business.
Because I had Rob Moore on here and he told me he does one for $50,000with individual people or something.
Yeah, man. Now, for me, I could very easily, a lot of people think I'm mad when I'm sitting with my business mentors. They say, why don't you do like the Academy Platinum version?
Yeah.
Where you can charge like $100,000 and then have them around your house in small groups. I already do that. On the Academy, everybody comes to my house in small groups already. Oh, shit. Well, why don't you offer unlimited mentoring? Not just like a mentoring call once for 15 minutes a week.
Yeah.
Unlimited and charge like $50,000. We already do that. Mm. Unlimited. They're like, unlimited?
So unlimited means I can WhatsApp. If I bought a $12,000 course, can I WhatsApp you 5-6 times a day?
You don't. You can post on our WhatsApp group, which I'm part of.
Yeah.
But no, it's not on WhatsApp. It's over the phone. Okay. So what you do is you, I'll show you, man.
How many full-time staff have you got?
47, 48.
47. All just, and the majority of that is the property training, is it?
Oh, another thing I didn't tell you, when you're in the academy, I will finance your deals.
Example?
You find a good deal that needs financing.
So I've just found somewhere for half a bar in Bournemouth, $500,000 in Bournemouth.
Not quite.
And I need 25% or call it 20%?
So we will only lend up to 100 grand.
Okay.
Because we are, otherwise it's my own money.
Yeah.
If I was to say, oh yeah, man, I'll give you £1 million, it'll be gone pretty quick. Mm. So it's to get, for people that want to get their first little development project,
yeah,
I'll lend up to 100 grand, 80% loan to value.
Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah. And I gave over £4 million in the last 4 months to my students. Yeah.
Lent, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So what is their, they got no interest on that?
No, there's interest.
What interest is it?
1% a month, there or thereabouts.
So 12% for the year.
It go, after 6 months, it goes up a little. It's supposed to be a short, it's actually like a bridging loan.
Yeah.
So they'll buy a deal, they'll buy it cash, I'll loan them the majority of the money. But then once they've fixed it up, they'll remortgage it.
Yeah.
And then they'll pay me back.
Okay. So if they can't pay you, say if I borrowed 100 G's off you.
Yeah.
And in 5 months' time, I can't pay you back.
Yeah.
What do you do? Repossess the house?
Ultimately, that we would have to repossess the house, yeah. But that would be a horrible thing for everybody.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I'm putting my money where my mouth is, yeah, because when we loan money to people, we will obviously have seen the deal because they're on the academy.
Yeah.
So we'll know the deal, we'll know the person, you know? So it's, but that's never happened because I only set the company up for about, when was it? We gave our first, we've had our official launch about 5 months ago.
So well, I want to also find out about, but there's that massive thing on the internet with you and Rob Moore fighting with each other, having a go at each other. It just all sort of blew up the internet,
yeah,
of you two genuinely not liking each other. How did that all come about? Wasn't it something like...
Well, I saw him on your podcast as well.
Yeah.
And that was like the week before the fight.
Yeah.
So it dated very quick.
Yeah. It did.
And your fans hated him, which was really interesting.
Mm.
What do you think your fans will think of me? Do you think they'll hate me like they hated Rob Moore?
I don't know. You know what? I don't know.
Be interesting.
It'd be interesting to see. It'd be interesting to see the comments afterwards.
I was surprised how hated Rob Moore was. Because I don't think Rob Moore's a particularly hated guy. I'm probably more hated than Rob is.
Really?
Probably. Rob's...
Why are you both hated by people?
I wouldn't say we're hated.
No, but no, I'm not talking everyone. I'm just saying, why is there so much controversy around you and Rob Moore in the property world?
I can't speak for Rob because I don't know too much about Rob. For me, I think it's a combination of the fact that I'm talking about money pisses people off. I think the fact that I'm selling courses pisses people off because they're like, oh, why are you selling courses? Some people think that courses, and it blows my mind, they're so... I don't understand why they think it, but they do, because I've seen the comments. Oh, I thought this person was really good, and then I realized he sells courses. He's a scam. It's like, what? Since when is selling courses be a scam? Like, what the heck? To me, it don't make sense. But for some reason, I'd love to sit down with someone and find out why. But there's that. And then I also think in Britain, particularly, like in America, if you're driving a Ferrari in America, I'm not really into Ferraris, but if you was, they would clap you. But in England, they'd be like resentful. They'd think you're a wanker.
Yeah.
So I think when you're talking about, oh, I made a load of money. Oh, and here's how you can too. Yeah. It's just like, oh, get out. Yeah. You know, in England, people don't like that.
But do you think the way you are,
yeah,
as a British man,
yeah,
giving it the old American style, this is how you make money. This is what you got to do, people. This is what you do. And we're on stage throwing this and da, da, da.
Yeah.
You know, maybe. I'm not used to that world whatsoever. But me looking in, I think, mate, get off stage, mate. The way you are with it, some people buy into it. Me personally, I personally wouldn't buy into it.
I think though.
I don't think I would.
I think you would. Absolutely.
I don't think I would.
Of course you would.
No, I wouldn't.
But you're a smart person.
Yeah, but I wouldn't buy into you up there giving, oh, everybody, hands in the air, people, if you want to be a millionaire one day. Like, I don't know. I wouldn't buy into that. I'd see straight through you, and all the people around me, I'd be looking left and right thinking, I hope you lot are seeing straight through this fella.
What do you mean?
But, straight through the American style.
No, but.
I believe that your courses are probably absolutely fantastic. And I believe that you're teaching people the quick way to learn everything you need to know about property. But that person's got to have the energy to get up, go, and has got to have that.
Do you know what you would do, though?
They've got to have that vibe about them to go, you know what, I really want to make this work, and I'm going to follow everything that he tells me to do, and hopefully it will work.
No, but how you'd buy into it if you were interested in property? You might not even come to a £1 course. You've never been already, so maybe you wouldn't. But I think what you would do is you'd watch a couple of YouTube videos, and you go, this is interesting. You'd probably maybe go on to a webinar and you'd watch, you know, you'd register for a webinar to learn about property development or whatever it was that you're interested in. And then I'd do a sale in the exact same way as I do on stage, where I'd do a stack and I'd make an offer in a very attractive way. And you'd look at the return on investment and you'd think, an online course learning the A to Z of this particular strategy for $995, you know what? Even if I just get one deal, even if I just knock £1,000 off of the asking price with a slight little negotiation line, you know what? I'll take a punt. You'd do it. You'd love it. You'd see how awesome it is. You'd then get another course, and then you think, you know what? I'm just going to do the academy. I reckon you would.
How many people, what percentage of people do you reckon who do your course give up?
It depends what you mean by do my course. If you mean do the £1 course, then...
No, the £1 in or there, that's like just turn up and have a free day, and if you like it, great, it's a quid.
Yeah.
For that quid, they've got to give you their bank details.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, their card.
So that makes it easier at the end of the day to go, whack, we've got your details, ready, let's press play, put the money in the bank, job done.
No, it doesn't. The reason we charge £1, for a start, there's a no-show fee.
Yep.
So if they book and don't turn up and don't tell us, we charge them £100.
Okay.
That's the main reason it's £1. Also, it's tax efficient because when you're buying a course, you can claim it back, but not if it's the first course you did. But if it's the second course you did with that provider, then it's developing in a skill, you can claim it back.
So are you charging £2,000 or £2,000 plus VAT to everyone?
£1,995.
Plus VAT?
Including VAT.
Including VAT?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because the normal bod, if they're paying £1,995 plus VAT, that's a bit harsh, isn't it? If they're a non-business.
Well, it's not harsh. It would still be incredibly good value.
Yeah.
But if they go to sign up and then they realise that there's 20% on top, it's going to like make them think, what?
Have you ever put a VAT on top?
I think we did used to back in the early days because a lot of people do.
Yeah.
They'll say, oh, it's even now, like, it doesn't matter for me because I'm VAT registered, but it'll be like, oh, it's £2,000. You go, all right, cool. And you go to buy it and it's 2,400. And you're like, hang on a minute. Yeah. And they're like, oh, well, we've got to pay the VAT, man.
Yeah.
I think when I was deal selling, I remember going VAT registered and it's a bit of an awkward, what do we say now? Do we say £2,000 plus VAT? Or do we? So there was that bit of awkward transition.
Yeah.
But that's, for many years,
that's like us selling 30,000 tickets to our Bournemouth Sevens Festival and saying it's £100 a ticket plus VAT.
Yeah.
People would just be like, mate, it's £100 a ticket.
It's slightly different.
We've got to take it on the chin ourselves.
It's slightly different because we're selling, it's kind of a bit more B2B, what we're doing. But probably, are most of them very registered? Probably not. So,
So tell me about the clash with Rob Moore. What happened?
Rob Moore said on a podcast like this, he started talking about me and saying he could beat me in a fight. And I was just like, firstly, I don't think he could. But it's a bit of a strange thing to talk about and whatever. So I just, you know, didn't really do anything about it. But then when I met him and we did an interview and I was on his podcast, I then just brought it up.
Okay.
So I was like, hey, remember when you said you could beat me up? Did you really believe that? Like, would you put money on that? Or I was just cheekily kind of having a chat with him. And he was like, it was like he prepared his entire life for this moment. Because he just went, yep, £50,000. And I was like, shit. His confidence made me a little bit like, okay, is this dude, I didn't know as well, or maybe I've been told I've forgotten, but he has a black belt in kickboxing. So I agreed to fight him, but then afterwards I was thinking like, damn, I'm going to have to train for this.
Yeah.
He's trash talking me. I'm trash talking him. He came on your podcast and he's saying, oh, I'm going to do this to him and that to him. It's a knockout. Mm-hmm. I've already won this fight. And I'm just like, okay.
When you heard him on our podcast.
Yeah, I did. I watched the whole thing.
Did you?
Yeah.
What were you thinking when he was talking about what he's going to do to you in the fight?
I mean, I was kind of just taking it with a pinch of salt because everyone talks a big game to promote the fight.
Until you get punched in the face.
Well, that's true. But there's also an element of he's a marketer, right? Yeah. So part of me is thinking, is he saying this just to market the fight because he's got to sell a couple thousand tickets? Or does he actually believe this? But my coach just said, ignore him, train hard. Whoever trains the hardest is going to win the fight. So I just took it seriously. Trained like I was training for a professional fight.
How long did you train for?
About 6 months.
And how much weight did you lose?
I lost 4 stone and then I lost another stone after the fight.
Respect.
Thanks, man.
Respect for 4 stone, mate.
Yeah, wow. 5 now.
Wow, fair play.
And I'm still...
Did it make you really motivated to say, right, this bloke's trash talking me the whole time? Were you waking up every day thinking about him, thinking of what you're going to do to him? What was going through your mind?
Not really. I was waking up every day just thinking about training.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, I just said, right, I'm going to train this many hours a week. This is what I'm going to do. And I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
No matter how I feel, no matter what I'm thinking, 6 months is too long to be waking up feeling angry. I want to fight. It's got to be discipline. I've just got to do what I need to do. So I was training about 10 hours a week, obviously on top of my business and everything like that, eating clean. And then, yeah, kicked his ass, knocked him down on the first round. He was on his knees like a little bitch in round one. And then afterwards he was like, oh, but I had a headache. I'm like, of course you had a headache. I smacked you in the head. That's why you had a headache. Oh, but you were so much heavier than me. Well, you agreed to fight me when I was 4 stone bigger. So now you're complaining now that I'm too heavy when I lost 4 stone. Okay. So, yeah, I don't think he took it that well, to be honest. Mm. I think he took it bad. But you know what? Respect to the guy for getting in the ring.
Respect to both of you getting in the ring.
Yeah.
And you're both colourful, controversial characters. And me getting to know Rob after that podcast, I know a lot of our fans didn't warm to him, but actually he's a nice guy.
He's a good guy.
He's a nice guy. He's got a big heart on him.
Yeah, he does.
And
I've got no
He's
beef.
Been very kind to me since we've done the podcast, et cetera, et cetera, you know?
Now, he's a professional.
Yeah.
But
if I was him, though,
yeah,
I wouldn't have bigged it up so much. I would have gone more under the radar and just trained.
But then he wouldn't have sold tickets.
Sold tickets. I get it.
It's a tough
one. Did you pipe up?
Yeah.
Oh, you did you?
Oh, mate. I did more trash talking than him, probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
Give me an example.
Well, I said that he looked like a gay rat dressed up for a nightclub because he wears his braces. When I went to meet him for our conference, I wore the braces, you know, the little gay braces that he wears. I wore them. And then he was going on, oh, all his people, you're homophobic. I'm not being homophobic. I'm just saying you look like someone getting ready to go to a gay bar. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's how you look.
Yeah.
So we were trash talking. But yeah, I didn't really actually have any hate for the guy.
No, of course not. You're two property developers. I found it quite odd, if I was honest with you.
Yeah.
I did. Looking in, I thought, God, this is odd. But this is quite a good luck. It was going to charity as well.
Yeah. Well,
how much money went to charity in the end?
All of it.
What, 50 grand?
Well, no, a lot more than that. Because it was 50 grand. Then we upped it to 100 grand. So we both put in 100 grand each. So the purse...
Wait, hold on. It was 50 bags you shook hands on.
Yeah.
When was the next time it got upped? Where were you?
During our trash talk.
What? In the same room?
In person, we met up again and yeah. And he was like, oh, I know 100%. I was like, okay, well, if you know 100%, because I think I'm a bit richer than him.
Mm.
So for me, upping it 50 grand ain't really a big deal. Because I tried to up it again, but he wasn't having it.
Okay. Well, he knew his limits.
I think he knew his limits, yeah.
So the first time you were on his podcast,
yeah,
he come in with a 50 grand.
Yes.
You then met up again.
Then I trained a bit and I started thinking I'm going to win this.
Okay.
So I upped it. I asked him, do you want to up it to 100?
Where were you when you upped it to 100?
I can't remember, but we were in person.
Okay.
Meeting at some venue.
Okay.
So then we upped it to 100.
All recorded.
Then I said to him, you say you're going to give the money to charity. I'm putting in 100, you're putting in 100. That's 200.
Yeah.
If you win, are you putting the whole 200 or are you clawing your 100 back and just giving my 100 to charity?
Yeah.
And he wouldn't answer that question. So I said, just for the record, I'm putting in the full 200 and anything we raise in ticket sales. So we built a hospital ward in Uganda, which is now built.
Amazing.
Which cost 200 grand.
What sort of feedback were you getting when all this was going on? This whole lead up that two property developers. Why didn't you like each other?
We didn't hate each other.
Wasn't it competition that my training business is bigger than your training business and you're a liar and you're a liar? What was going on? What stemmed it all?
Not really. When I blew up big and then he said he could beat me in a fight and all that.
You blew up big when?
When we talked about like 2018, 2019, that kind of
YouTube
era.
YouTube and all that.
Thousand people in a room.
Yeah.
He's getting pissed off, being shady, saying I could beat him in a fight. His whole area is Peterborough. That's his area. He's not UK. He's just Peterborough. And Peterborough's a shithole. And that's his whole, all of his train tests, all of his properties, all of his it's all in Peterborough. So I just thought, you know what? Let me find the biggest venue in Peterborough and just sell it out. I'll go to Peterborough. So I booked this venue and then I put like billboards all around his house. And I found out where he lived. I put billboards on my face. Nah, come into Peterborough, the biggest and the best in Peterborough.
Where did you put these? On the big billboards?
On billboards, yeah, we just paid. Yeah, oh, 10 grand, yeah, 10 grand, yeah. Rob messaged me and said,
quality.
Rob messaged me, got my number, and he said, what was the return on investment on those billboards? Like, businessman, like, yeah. Oh, what was the ROI?
Zilch.
I said 100% because you saw it.
Yeah.
What do you mean? I only put it there to piss you off. If it pissed you off, my return on investment was 100%.
Yeah.
Mission accomplished. So yeah, so there was that.
So what? So this is July 2023, the fight.
Yeah.
What month were you putting these billboards
on? Oh, that was way prior.
Was it?
This was like before lockdown. This was okay. Like 2018, 2019.
So you had beef all
for
the
years.
You had beef for three, 4 years before you had the fight?
A little bit of beef, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, listen, I got bigger beef with people.
Yeah.
I describe Rob now as a friend of me.
Yeah, okay.
Like, you know, kind of a friend. Kind
How's
of
he been since losing the fight towards you?
Well, I actually messaged him recently, about a month ago, and I said to him, hey, do you want to come up to one of my events and speak? You know, there's going to be 400 people. Come and have a chat. Just my Caddy members. And I'll buy everybody a book and I'll make sure that you're the author. I'll buy 400 copies of your book and give you a bit of money. You come down and speak. And he was like, yeah, I'll come. And then I was like, when do you want to come? And he's not responding. And he's a bit, I think he might be a bit, I think he probably thinks in his mind that if he came, I'd be like teasing him. But actually, I wouldn't at all. I would just be honouring him and respecting him.
Yeah.
So there's no beef now on my side, apart from a tiny bit because of how sour he was when he said about the weight thing and made a few excuses. I wish that he just took the beating like a man. I wish he just said, you know what? The best man won on the night. Yeah. Congratulations for the weight loss. Congratulations for getting sharp and for beating me in the boxing ring fair and square. If he just said that, I would have respected him more, but he didn't say that.
Mm.
But still, man, he got in the ring. Mm. Takes balls.
Yeah, absolutely.
Massive balls.
Where was the fight?
Brentwood. Essex, yeah.
In Brentwood. Okay. Yeah. What's that feeling like for you going in the ring on that night, nerves-wise?
I was pretty nervous.
Mm.
I was. I'm always nervous, though, when I do things like that. I mean, fighting. I don't know if you've ever had a fight. Like an organized fight like that.
Not an organized one, though.
Yeah, it's pretty nerve wracking.
Yeah,
like the most nervous I was when I was backstage having my hands wrapped. It's like 200 grand on the table.
Yeah,
embarrassment.
Yeah,
friends and family.
Yeah,
all this hype. Muhammad Ali says that he used to hype the fights, but that used to make him more nervous because of the trash talk. But if he didn't trash talk, he wouldn't sell the tickets.
Mm.
I was thinking there's been a lot of trash talk. Mm. See, I was nervous, man. But I think it's normal.
I bet, yeah. It is
normal. Get my hands wrapped. Because then when I was having my hands wrapped, I was thinking, as soon as my hands are wrapped,
I'm in.
I can't even go to the toilet.
Yeah.
I'm just in.
Yeah.
I was nervous, man.
Was the more the nerve, not losing 200 Gs? Well, listen, 200 Gs.
You want the money. I didn't give him monkeys.
Would it be the nerves on the pride post-fight 100%. For you?
100%. Yeah. The money is either going to go to my charity.
Yeah.
Or his charity.
So it's all goodness.
You know what I'm saying? Like, oh no, I want the money. It's just, but the funny thing is I had a fight a couple months after the Rob fight and I lost.
Mm.
And even though it wasn't a big fight, it was just a quiet thing. It was nothing like the Rob Moore fight. It's a horrible feeling.
Yeah.
I'm still upset now.
Yeah.
It's months ago. I still wake up feeling pissed off.
How many people went to yours and Rob's fight?
I think it was about, we were totally, totally packed. The venue was rammed. I think there was, they said 800 was max, but we oversold it a bit. I think we might have had around 2,000 or just shy of 2,000 in the room.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Really, isn't it? A couple of property developers having a tear up.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you knocked him down in the first round, what was that feeling like?
I was like, I'm going to win this. Comfortable. And then when he hit me and it didn't hurt, I was like, he can't hurt me. He's knocked down. I'm winning. I was just chilled.
What did you do after the fight?
Went out, had a big cigar, hide out at a nightclub, took all my friends, gave my trainer a big 6,000 tip and just enjoyed the night. Mm. I was buzzing for weeks after that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Tell me about your YouTube channel.
You've
got like 300,000 subscribers or 400,000 subscribers, something like that. You've put on...
Almost. I think there's about 430 something thousand.
Is that what it is? Is it
7 million views last month?
And how many years have you been doing your YouTube channel?
Since 2015.
So you started early.
Yeah. Yeah. I was the biggest.
What did you see that not a lot of other people in the UK saw starting that early for what you were doing?
I started it by mistake. So I had like an email list where I was emailing my investor, and I'd say to my investors when I meet the networking, join my newsletter. I can't really say join my newsletter and I'll sell you my deals. Yeah. Got to add some value, right? Mm. Join my newsletter and what? So I said, join my newsletter and I'll send out some valuable information every month.
Yeah.
So all these people are joining and I'm like, shit, man, what am I going to send them? I'll have to write a blog and send them a blog. And I started doing that and I don't like writing blogs. And I thought, you know what? Forget. I'm just going to film a video and send it to them. Do a video. Hey, what's happening? My name is Samir. I just bought this house. This is the type of property I'm looking to buy. If you want me to find you a house like this, you know, this is the three things you need to look for, blah, 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 blah. And then I'm like, how am I going to send this to my audience? If you put it on YouTube, I send them the YouTube link.
Yeah.
I got about 600 people on my email list. I do a YouTube video, send it to them. I get about 500 views. I'll be like, okay, most of them saw it.
Yeah, okay.
But then I start getting more views than I had on my list. I'm like, how on earth is that happening? Mm. I've only got 600 people on my list. I've got 2,000 views. What? Then I realized, oh, people are finding me organically.
Yeah.
Okay. I need to take this more serious. Mm. So now people are finding me organically and coming to my list instead of people on my list seeing the video. Mm. People are coming to the video, then going to my list. So my list started growing and that helped my business. And then I took it serious. Mm. Then I hired a full-time videographer.
Yeah. How many people are working on your personal brand these days?
Nobody.
So who's doing your YouTube video editing?
I don't have any employees that do that. I do a lot myself.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you outsource it? Anything?
I've got a company, a video production company, who film and stuff like that, but they're not employees. They just do it on top of what they're doing. Mm. Like, not like you. Mm. I see you, all your staff and that. Offer. I do a lot myself. Even Instagram and everything, if you see a post on Instagram, it's been posted and created by me.
Yeah.
I respond to everybody on Instagram.
Yeah, same.
I've got this thing where same. It's like...
I have to respond to everyone.
I do, mate.
Same.
I feel like...
Same. And I think I building that, because we've only been on YouTube for a year now.
Yeah.
And it's blowing up amazingly well.
Yeah.
Only 12 months, but I'm replying to everyone.
I do.
Because I think it just builds that connection.
It does. And also, if someone's taken the time
to write a nice paragraph or something, I agree.
How can I just ignore that?
Agree. Totally.
And
agree.
I get, like, if you see how many messages I get a lot. Yeah. Like, look, you can see them even now, just all.
Yeah, your mum, your auntie.
Yeah.
Your
you know.
Yeah. I hear you.
Like, all today.
Yeah.
She's all today.
Yeah.
So, and I just... I must spend 2 hours a day.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
It's mad, isn't it?
Responding.
But I enjoy it.
I do.
I enjoy it.
I get my wife to help me sometimes. Yeah. Or sometimes I get my, if I'm busy, I'll get my assistant to, I'll say, can you go? But I'll always say, if my assistant jumps on, I'll be like, if there's anything that's personally like to me,
yeah,
put it in the general box or whatever. But if there's something like, oh, I'm struggling to get my ticket, blah, 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 just send them the link. So I get a bit of help.
I find the hardest bit is flipping between all the social media platforms. Like,
like
YouTube, I've got to answer all people on YouTube. Now I've got to Instagram and answer, and I'm Facebook and now on LinkedIn. And
well, I went on TikTok recently.
We've done TikTok. I haven't read one message on TikTok.
Yeah.
I just think it's a very different platform.
Oh, I agree.
It's not a, like growing a YouTube channel is very hard. But when you break the back of it, it's absolutely fantastic. And I feel it's the most powerful platform with LinkedIn. But that's just me. Facebook works a treat as well. Instagram is kind of a showy.
Instagram is my favorite.
Would you say Instagram's more sort of, not showy?
It probably is. I'm not that showy on there. I'm not saying I'm not showy at all, but I'm not into, like, if you look at the way I dress, I don't wear jewelry, fancy watches.
No watches,
I don't drive fancy cars. I live a reasonably, you know.
I saw that yellow one you got in the car park.
Which one was that?
Trotters independent trader. Yeah. Is that just for a gag?
Yeah, man. It's my favourite.
It's your fave.
Are you joking?
No, your one in the car park.
The Range Rover.
No, the Trotters independent That's traders one. Mine, the yellow bro. One.
That's, are you joking? That's not my car.
Yeah, it is.
I'll take it. I'll take it, but I didn't come in. I came in a gold Range Rover, but it's okay.
It's a three-wheeler. No, I'm only playing.
I don't know if you're serious, because I did, for my financial freedom challenge, I did have a little yellow.
Did you?
Banger.
Did you?
Yeah. Just a couple months ago. I started again from scratch.
Why?
Just for fun.
What do you mean you started from scratch?
Oh, yeah, bro. I do
have
all
you,
the time.
Have you ever gone bankrupt?
No.
No. When you say scratch then, you built your business up from a young 17-year-old. What are you today? 34?
32.
32. 17-year-old. The last 2-3 years, how have they been for you post-pandemic? Have you changed as a person? Have you improved as a person for when you look what you were doing in the hotels for a pound a man, 2018, yeah. 2019. Do you feel like you're a new Samuel Leeds, yeah, come 2022, 2023, 2024?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. Massively.
In what way?
Way more focused on, way more customer focused, customer obsessed, more relaxed. In lockdown, it was actually, although it hurt our business, I mean, our training business, oh, in lockdown, suffered. We were spending £500,000 a month on overheads. And then suddenly, lockdown, can't make any money,
yeah,
on the training. Property business, I had to sell a bunch of my houses. That's when I was like, thank God I got,
yeah,
multiple, you know, just to pay staff and that in the early days before furlough was announced.
How many houses do you have when lockdown hit?
Less than I do now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I had to, I did sell a bunch.
Yeah. Just to pay people off and, yeah, make, well, sure.
Well, I sold about maybe 7, 8, 9 houses.
Out of how many? Roughly.
Multiple hundred.
Really?
Yeah.
What, that you owned?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I own quite...
Fair play, mate. Yeah. Didn't know that.
Yeah, I own quite a few. It also depends what you call a house as well. Like, I can... People are obsessed with knowing what...
Could you go from a house from like 60 grand to 500 G's? What's your bracket? Apart from your own personal house, because I'd imagine that's a, yeah, 2 or 3 mil in itself, but...
Yeah, a bit more, but yeah. What's a house? What would I buy now? Now I'm more of a developer.
Yeah.
So now it's bigger stuff and it's land and
what,
and
knockdown,
like that.
Build from scratch.
Yeah. And also commercial.
Mm.
I mean, I just bought this year, last year, I bought 2 hotels in the millions. I bought a factory that's got a gross development.
Whereabouts in the hotels and the factory in the country?
Cambridge, one of the hotels. Another of the hotels is in Peak District. Factory is in Wolverhampton.
So you don't care where anything is, you'll just buy if the deal's right?
Not exactly.
Okay.
Oxford's not too far. Cambridge is not a million miles away from where I live. Yeah. I live in Beaconsfield. Yeah. So, and it was just, I got a pound option on it.
Mm.
You know, I was talking earlier about an option to buy it.
Yeah.
I bought it for a pound, effectively. Yeah. Anyway, long story. The factory is where I'm from, Wolverhampton. That's, yeah, where I was born and bred, pretty much.
I used to have a nightclub in Wolverhampton.
Whereabouts?
Years ago.
Centre.
Was it called the Canal Club? Sort of, okay, 20 odd years. Was it Canal Club? I can't remember. I don't know. They were talking year 2000, 2001. I think we had that for about 3 years.
It's a good area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Different Wolverhampton.
But that factory has got a gross development value of about 7 mil.
Okay.
And what'd I bought it for a million.
You bought it for a mil? Yeah. How much you got to spend on it?
3.5 to 4.
Oh, well, happy days.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not bad.
No, mate.
But hey, I don't want to speak too soon because the work's still going on.
Of course, of course.
I don't talk about my developments on
Instagram. You don't care if you've got 200 properties or 300 properties. You don't care where they are in the country. If the deal's right.
Yeah.
And then what do? You bring the deal back. And have you got a team of people who will deal,
yeah,
with that deal?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have. And I've employed most of my family.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How many family members you employed?
Jeez.
Roughly. 10? 5?
It's got to be about 10.
Really?
Yeah.
How's that? Because there's a big chat. Depends out there, family, business, family, friends.
I disagree with people that say don't do business with family. It depends how you mean by employed, sorry, exactly, as well. Like, my brother, I've partnered with him.
Yeah.
He's not an employee.
He's 50-50s?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Is he older or younger?
He's older.
Quality.
And then my other brother, who's my brother-in-law.
Yeah.
I've employed him, but he's the director of one of our project management companies.
Yeah.
So he does all the big developments there. He's a chartered quantity surveyor.
Brilliant.
So he's on the book. Amanda's parents. Amanda's my wife, sorry.
Yeah.
My mom works as one of our mentors.
Amazing.
For the training, but she's also in property. So just loads, man.
Good for
And
you,
also,
man.
I moved out of Wolverhampton to Beaconsfield and I moved over 42 people to my village, mostly family.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Bought my sister a house last year.
How nice is that for you able to do that? And you know, people say, money and happiness and all this, da, da, da. It gives you the freedom to be able to do the nice stuff that you're doing, right?
It's also, it's just a great feeling to be able to help the people that, I remember when I was 17 years old and I was just training and everyone was like, what are you doing? I had a Ford KA, dents on it. I bought it for 450 quid and I was like, oh, this is going to run out of petrol, but I couldn't afford to top it up.
Yeah,
breaks down. I push it to the nearest petrol station in the rain. I put £5 minimum spend on it And then my card declines. My other card declines. I can't literally pay £5. I rang my little sister who was in school, who's 4 years younger. She must have been 13. I said, can I borrow £5? She says, I'll bank transfer it to her little account. She transferred me £5, which got me home. To be able to then buy her a house 15, 16 years later and just say, you can stay here forever. There's no mortgage on it. It's yours. Set up a little company called Tiffany. My sister's called Tiffany. Set up a little company called Tiffany's Home. Tiffany's Home Limited. It's your house. It's a good feeling.
That's a lovely feeling.
And having all your parents move in. My bro lives 30 seconds from me. He bought a mansion a minute away from me. Like when we grew up, we had nothing.
Yeah.
Couldn't afford carpets on the times. So it's a good feeling.
Good for you.
I appreciate it, bro.
Yeah, mate. Really good for you. That's powerful.
Hard work, though.
Yeah. But you love it.
I love it.
And when you love something,
yeah,
it's not hard work.
Yeah.
Because you and I, we're constant. As entrepreneurs, you're constant thinking, da-da-da, building up teams, building up. My world's very different to yours, obviously, with what I do. But yeah, I hear you. What have your movements been in the past year? Because you said you've changed. And from meeting you today, I can see the emotion in your face that you were a different person 2018, 2019. The pandemic slowed everyone down. It made us all reflect and stop.
Yeah.
It seems like you've grown into a better entrepreneur, a better businessman. Maybe a little bit more humble. Is that because you've got money in the bank and everything slowed down for you to go, I know what I want now in life?
I don't know exactly. I think that I've had a tough time in business, and tough times do make you humble.
Yeah,
and also make you stronger. I've had a lot of people, you know, I've had bad press 2019. Had a lot of bad press. Had a lot of people stab me in the back. People that I thought were friends weren't friends. And then you realise that people's opinions doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I've 2020 been in a situation where I'm struggling to pay my staff. Had to sell houses. I sold one house. I bought it. It was just I can't even remember the figures on it, but I bought this house, cheap house, spent a few thousand refurbishing it. And then I sold it for a loss. And I lost money on it. And I was just like, it's painful. And then the person that bought it from me saw that it had been my house because they could see the title, they knew and they knew who I was. Mm. And they started taunting me on Instagram. Ah, you bought this house and you've lost money. I bought it. Samuel Leeds, Mr. Moneymaker. Like taunting me.
Mm.
And I was thinking, yeah, well, I'm in a bit of a sticky spot. That's why you have assets. Mm. So that when times get tough, like a global pandemic, you can get yourself out of a hole. But like, yeah, it's just interesting.
Mm.
Yeah, it's interesting. I definitely think I'm changing every day. I'm growing and trying to get better.
How long have you been married for?
Next year, it's going to be 10 years.
10 years. And kids?
Three kids.
Got three kids?
Yeah.
Ages?
Oldest is 6 and the youngest is 2.
See, that slows you down. That makes you put things in perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think just life, just in general. And now as well, I'm not old, I'm still young, I'm 32. But, you know, it's like, what is life?
Mm.
Why am I doing what I'm doing? You know, remembering why you started as well. Not getting just drawn into it all being about the numbers, because ultimately it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't.
And it certainly doesn't change my life. I think when you're starting out and it's like, if I don't get this sale, I'm not going to eat.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
But it gets to a point where it's like, well, actually, of course I want to make money.
Yeah.
But what's the real...
But it doesn't mean anything. You get to a level where after that, it doesn't really mean... It's not going to affect your day-to-day life.
You think it does though, don't you? You think, oh, but it means I can get that extra investment. Yeah. It means I can finish the refurb here. It means
If you're like myself, I'm not into fast cars, sports cars, watches and da-da-da-da-da. Like nice holidays. I love my mates. I love my family. I love keeping fit and healthy and exercising.
Yeah.
Having good people around me and long lunches and holidays. They're my things.
Yeah.
What is it for you?
Mate, experiences all day long.
Yeah.
I will be outraged if with my wife if she spends, like, if she goes, oh, if she gets me a top, and sometimes I'll ask her, how much was that top? Is that of interest? Just so I know I can't get food on it. How much was that top? If it's like more than £100, I'm like, what the heck? Yeah. Why are you spending £150 on a shirt?
Yeah.
I can't tell the difference if it's 20 or 100 or 1,000. So I don't spend money on clothes. I have a nice car. I have a Range Rover, which is nice. And it massages me. It has a fridge in it. Cool. But that's comfort.
Yep.
That's it.
Why a gold one?
I don't know. I think it's just, it's got like a kingly feel to it. You know, all part of the experience. Been like, yeah, man, I'm getting into my nice gold, high up car. But that's the most expensive luxury. Okay, my house, but it's all experiences. Things like watches, as much as people will tell me it's an asset, it's an investment, I don't get it. And also, I would never buy a property that I just had on my hand like this that someone could just steal.
Yeah.
So if I've got a 50 grand watch, just someone's take it like that.
Yeah.
I'm risking my life. Interestingly, Floyd Mayweather has all these security guards around him. But it's only because he's so bling bling.
Yeah.
Because Richie Branson's richer than Floyd.
Yeah.
And Richie Branson don't have all those security guards. He's chill.
Mm.
Just travels, low-key, and he's richer. So if you're bling bling, I just don't get it.
How do you feel when there's a troll
coming
after you? How does that make you feel? Because you seem to me that you're easy come, easy go, happy chappy. It seems to me previous years you're putting on this front to be this person. Da, da, da. It seems to me now that you're actually comfortable in your own skin. And when you get a troll after you, you can have 1,000 nice comments and one troll comes in at you. What does that personally make you feel like?
Generally speaking, I can't say I get too bogged down with trolls, because if I did, I'd be miserable because I have a lot of trolls. Obviously, you know, no one wants to be getting hated on. And also, I think it depends on what they're saying. There was this one guy that messaged me, and he just sent me a direct message, and he said, "You're a fat C-U-N-T," boom, as the message. And I responded, because I spoke to everybody. Not going to make any exceptions. What did you say? I said to him, "Are you having a bad day? You having a bad day, mate? You okay?" And he responded back and said, "Yeah, shit." And I said, "Well, if there's anything I can do for you, you know, let me know." It turns out he then starts talking to me, sharing his life story. It turns out he's actually been watching my videos for years. He doesn't hate me. So I think when someone like just comments just something horrible, normally I think, actually, maybe they're not having a great day.
Well, it's their own stuff.
Yeah.
It's their own stuff.
But sometimes it's not. Sometimes I'll get someone coming for me and there's actually merit in what they're saying. And I'll be like, that's an interesting point. And then I'll ponder it. Like if someone says something, like I used to have it a lot in interviews because I quite like to talk. So if I'd be interviewing people, I'd sometimes talk over them, or I'd ask them a question, and then as they were talking, I'd be thinking about my next question, or you know what I mean? And people used to comment, you're a terrible interviewer. Give them a chance to speak, for goodness sake. And that, I was actually like, okay, I need to learn here. You know, so you can't just disregard everything someone says that's negative as they're a troll. Sometimes, no, they're your friend, they're your critic.
Why do you think there is, like a minute ago, in your own words, there's a lot of haters out there?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I'm confident that even on this interview, there'll be people, oh my gosh, you know, you're such a jerk. Or they'll be coming for you. Why would you platform this course seller? Delete this video. This guy, he sells courses, you know.
But that's why we spoke, because I want to put you in a light that we're having a fellow conversation here, that some people who don't like you may see you in a different light today.
Maybe. Or some people might think, yep, confirmed everything I already...
Yes, what a chopper. Going back, why is the hatred there?
I don't know. I don't really...
You must know. You must look at yourself sometimes and look in the mirror and go, God, I'm all out there doing these videos, doing this, doing that, being loud and being brash. There must be something that triggers you to go, you know what, if I toned that down a little bit in my 30s, because you're still young, right? Mm. 32. Mm. You were doing all that in your 20s. Fair play, in your 20s, everyone's grafting for everything. You get out of the way, everyone's... Now in your 30s, it's your next chapter that is probably going to slow down. There must be something you realised you were doing wrong to get this hatred.
I don't think, though, when I'm, doing videos, if you met me at a party or if you come around my house, I'm just quite a loud, out there, expressive person, generally. So when I'm doing a video, I'll be the same. Hey, what's up? I'm standing right now in Newcastle. I just bought... that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So
that's not a front. That's just you.
That's just me. Yeah. That's just me doing my thing.
100% strip everything back. That is Samuel Leeds.
When people meet me sometimes in real life, they'll be like, I'll send someone a personal voice note or a video. I'll make a new friend and then I'll be chatting and I'll do them a quick video. Hey, I'm just at your house. And they'll be like, it was like I was watching you on TikTok. You're the same. So yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. Obviously, you know, sometimes I might have to deliberately, but I might play up or lean into it slightly. But yeah, that is just kind of me. And occasionally I'll do things controversial on purpose. Mm. Just because I know it would piss some people off. I don't know if you saw it. Did you see my chainsaw stuff?
Yeah, what was that? I was about to say, someone's in your house not paying rent. So you took a chainsaw and chainsawed the whole door out and kicked it in.
Well, that's what it looked like. The reality is I just bought the property. There was no one in it.
Is that right?
Yeah, there was no one in it.
Genius.
I just did it just to piss people off.
Or just to get the PR.
Right. I was on national TV talking about it. It was in the Sun. It was in the Mirror. It was every big newspaper it was in.
How did someone pick it up? Are you thinking, hold on a minute, if I chainsaw this, someone filmed it. Are you just banging it out and posting it?
Yeah, I just posted it on Instagram. It got picked up within 2 hours. And when I posted it, I messaged my brother and I said, give it 24 hours. It's going to be all over the TV newspapers. Give it 24 hours. And it was.
And why did you want to do that?
I wanted to do it for a few reasons. But the main reason was because when I sawed the door... And I said, this is what happens if guests don't pay and refuse to leave the house. That was my caption. I knew that the media would paint me to be the bad guy. Oh, this person, he's terrible. Landlord. Even though they don't know the facts, as it happens, it's a stunt anyway. But for all they know, it could be being used as a brothel for sex trafficking. Mm. And I could have come out and to get in. Mm. They don't know anything, but I knew that they would go with this anti-landlord, anti-rich guy, and they did. Millionaire landlord chainsaws out tenants. Who said there was tenants in there? Who said... So I knew that they'd go with that narrative. And then on national TV, when they were interviewing me, I called them out and I said, you published a story. And also it was GB News, who liked to consider themselves as really different and quite right-winged and conservative and probably pro-landlords. I was like, no. You published a story today saying millionaire landlord kicks out tenants. Mm. They weren't tenants. Mm. There weren't even any guests in there. What's going on? What? So it was really, and also just to get conversations, to get people talking, and of course getting eyeballs. They'll watch me with a chainsaw and they'll go, oh, that's interesting. And then next thing they know, they'll be sat in one of my £1 programs. They'll get hooked. You know what I mean? So it was just really just a stunt.
But that is a sort of thing that can create more hatred.
Potentially,
if you're looking in, because the normal Karen looking at that would go, oh God, I can't believe the landlords are doing the, and it comes back to Samuel Leeds, and then Samuel Leeds gets a knock-on effect of getting more people maybe trolling from that. Would you not best of just keeping stum?
Maybe, but that's boring, isn't it?
You know, I get it. I get everything you're doing, but I'm also thinking a young 30-year-old going through the next chapter.
Yeah,
how you mature as well through the chapter and just calm things down as
maybe vanilla. I mean,
not vanilla. Don't be vanilla at all, because that ain't you. But that's a great stunt to get publicity, but also that publicity can come back to you and be a negative effect as well on your personal brand.
It's true. Maybe I need to. I mean, don't get me wrong. There was people saying to me in my team, don't do it. and sometimes
I get that with my team as well. No, we're doing it. And then they all go, no, definitely. All right.
I have a code with some of my senior people in my team. We say green light, red light, orange light.
Yeah.
And if there's something that's a bit that was a strong orange.
Yeah.
But if it's not red, it kind of means you can't. Sometimes my team will say this is a red light.
Yeah. Okay.
And what that means is you can do it, but on your head.
Yeah.
We ain't backing you. Yeah. We ain't picking up the pieces. You will be on your own.
Yeah.
And then I'll 99.9% of the time, if I'm told by my team it's a red light, I won't do it.
Yeah, agree.
And every time I put out a YouTube video, if it's a little bit controversial, a little bit, I'll send it to them.
Yeah.
And then they look at it and they'll go, this bit here, this one sentence is a red light.
Yeah.
And I'll just chop it.
Yeah.
So I do have that.
Yeah.
I didn't have that a few years
ago. How does your 50-50 partner with your brother, what's his name?
Russell.
Russell. How does he, what does he do in the business? Because you're not going to be, you're going to be two different characters, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
What sort of character is Russell?
Systems, procedures.
All back end.
Back end.
Protecting.
Yeah. Yeah. Solid.
Yeah.
A little bit more, I wouldn't say he's 9 to 5. Jeez, he works hard.
Yeah.
But he's a bit more that way.
Okay. And you're the front man.
Yes.
The go-getter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm the marketer. I'm more marketing sales. He's more finance, systems, perfect, back-end, operations. 50-50 on everything.
What a great team.
All my properties.
Have you ever had an argument with him about business?
We have debates continually.
Yeah.
But we've never had...
Never fallen out.
No.
Great.
Never. But what our rule is, if we disagree, we'll debate it.
Yeah.
Whoever wins the debate gets what they want.
Yeah.
So let's say we're like, oh, we don't think we... Oh, I think we should buy this house. No, I don't think we should buy that house. Okay, well, let's have a debate.
Yeah.
We have a debate. And then if I'm like, oh, makes sense, actually. Can't really think of an answer. Yeah. Then he'll be like, got ya. Brilliant. Let's buy it. So that's our rule. Never had any problems really hiring family. Loads of family in the business. Disagree with people that say don't hire family or don't work with family. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I love working with my family.
Yeah, same. They're protected, don't they?
Been with my wife for many years. Never had an argument with my wife. Mm. Not once. Never fallen. We've had debates, disagreements, but we've never fallen out.
And where's your wife from?
Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Did you go back there?
I just got back yesterday.
Did you feel safe out in Zimbabwe?
Very safe.
Okay.
It's the only place where I could sit and not feel like, if you ever see me in a restaurant, I always have to have my back to a wall.
Yeah.
Just feel weird.
Why?
Oh, just in case someone comes up behind me, or I like to just be able to see what's going on.
Do you get recognised out?
Yeah.
In what sort of fame would you say it is?
I'd say if I go out, I'll probably get recognised. Like yesterday, I went to have my hair cut. I got stopped 3 times. It's not like...
In your hometown?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you venture out into other countries or other towns...
I got stopped more than I thought in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Got stopped quite a bit. I'd say probably, you know, if I go out somewhere where there's people,
yeah,
I'm probably going to get stopped. But when I get stopped, it's more like respectful, you know, hey, could I have a picture or a handshake or even just a nod?
Yeah.
Samuel Leeds, you know?
Yeah.
I don't get like fans.
Yeah.
It's more.
That's a nice level.
Yeah. I don't get like people like, oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't get that. But
tell me about when you dressed up as an old man.
Yeah.
Tell me that story.
Last month that went out.
Last month, yeah. Tell me what went on there.
That was when I get tired of hearing people saying, coming up with all the reasons as to why you can't be successful. Oh, but what about if you've got bad credit? Oh, but what about if this? Mm. What about if that? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you guys are coming up with so many excuses. Yeah. It just irritates me. So what I did was I took on all the excuses of the world. Brand new company, old man,
yeah,
no money, no contacts, what else, all the excuses, old banger car, no this, no that, no, bring it on, took it all on, and then as a social experiment, started again from scratch in property.
So you had makeup to make you look like an old man?
Correct.
And then you would dress up like an old man.
Yes.
And then what would you do in that day?
Go networking, just like I did when I was 17.
Yeah. And what was that feeling like? Did you have any sort of ageism against you? Did you have people thinking, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about, or he's a bit too old, or what went on?
It reminded me of when I started out from the beginning, because like now, because I've got the position that I'm in and I've got the wealth and stuff like that, I have respect in the industry. Even if I just go to an estate agent and I'll show them. Like if I'm putting an offer on a property, I'll never just put an offer on a property. I'll say to them, here's my offer. Here's my proof of funds.
Yeah.
You can see that 6 mil. Not in an arrogant way, but I'm letting them know I'm serious.
Yeah.
It's not about my offer. It's about the strength of my offer. Not about the price, about the strength. Look at that. right? Here's my solicitor's details. Here's my this, here's my that, here's my the other. This, right? So if they don't even know who I am, because they don't recognise me anyway, I got this. Whereas when I was starting out from scratch, I got nothing.
Yeah.
They don't recognise me. I had an alias name. I haven't got money in the bank. I'm starting again from scratch. So I actually quite like the feeling. It's quite refreshing.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, you know, this is what it's like.
So was that all filmed, you being an old man?
Mm-hmm.
And where's that going out?
It's already out. Went out last month or two ago.
Did it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've done that 11 times. I'm actually a bit addicted to it. I like the feeling.
Yeah.
And the buzz
of being fresh again.
Yeah.
But do you know what the biggest thing of entrepreneurs is? A lot of them go bust because they want that feeling of being bust and starting over again. What you're doing is an amazing thing, not going bust. Pretending you're starting over again and going for it.
But in my head, I have gone bust.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're right about entrepreneurs. Yeah, they do go bust, don't they?
It's a weird reason because people like the buzz, you know.
Do you reckon I'll ever go bust?
Do I think you'll ever go bust?
Yes.
No, I don't think you
will. I don't think I will.
No, I'm sitting here now after an hour and a half of you. I don't think you will.
I would never say never, though.
I don't think...
But I'm very surprised.
I don't think you will unless you are really stupid.
Yeah. I can't see it. I've got trusts and pension funds and...
Yeah, you're protecting the castle. Mm. You're protecting the castle.
And I own a castle.
You're putting a moat around it. You own a castle.
Mm.
Go on.
Ribbersford House, 20-bedroom castle in Kidderminster.
Yeah. Where's Kidderminster? Midlands, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm renovating
it. So you bought a...
Yeah.
You bought an actual castle?
Well, I mean... There's a lot of people, a lot of my haters will say, it's not a real castle.
If you showed me a photo would you go, that's a castle?
Yeah, you would, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, you can Google it. It's Ribbersford House.
Ribbersford House.
Ribbersford House, yeah.
How much did that cost?
I bought it for 800 grand. And it had everything wrong with it. Derelict.
Yeah.
Bats. Japanese knotweed. Structural Japanese problem.
Knotweed.
Oh, mate. That was
that's
light.
That's enough to say no, right?
Yeah, but that was light compared to some of the other problems. The biggest problem was the bats.
Yeah.
Bats have more rights than
that's right.
Tenants.
Yeah.
No planning for what we wanted. Nightmare. It has been a nightmare.
When did you buy it?
2018.
Why did you buy it?
Because I wanted to be able to say, I own a castle.
That's good enough.
When you interviewed me in 2024 and mentioned castle, I wanted to be able to just go, did I tell you I own a castle? That was why. 100% return on investment now. No, why did I buy it? To make money.
Yeah.
I wanted to develop it. The gross development value is 6.7 million.
How much you got to spend on it? Four?
Probably about that, yeah.
So you'll be all in, including...
Maybe even more.
Including stamp. You'll be all in for 5.5.
Yeah. I'll probably
five
make
and a half,
about...
six.
I'll probably make about... 1 to 2 million.
Why are you doing it? Forget that I just want to own a castle. If it's a proper ball lake,
it's a ball lake.
Japanese knotweed, bats, yeah. Castle.
I didn't know it was so bad though.
But at that point, 2018, you're 6 years younger.
Yeah.
You're 26, 27
yeah,
probably.
About that, yeah.
Is that a very different Samuel than it is today?
Oh, yeah.
Would you know what you know now, would you have bought a castle to that castle today?
I don't have regrets from buying it because I've learned a lot. And I do think I'll finish it and make my money on it. However, no. I don't think I would advise somebody. I definitely wouldn't advise somebody in the position I was in then to buy it with no planning. It just don't make sense. Mm.
Samuel, I've really enjoyed this.
I've enjoyed it too.
Yeah, mate. It's been brilliant.
I'm going to know how much you actually enjoyed it, depending on what month it drops.
There's a 7-month waiting list.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I've genuinely enjoyed this and I've got to know you. And when we do these podcasts and stuff, as you see, I'm not scripted. This is all freestyle to actually find out about the person themselves. And do you know what? I can see your journey. I know I can visualize your journey. There's been some mistakes along the way. There's been highs and lows. There's been pressures. There's been all sorts. But I think the future is really bright for you as a personality and as an entrepreneur and as a front man.
I appreciate it. Yeah. And I've enjoyed it. I think you're a great interviewer. So thanks for having me on.
You're a gentleman. Good man, Sam.
Love, bro.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks.
Thank you. Hi, guys. I really hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Can you do us a favor and leave us a review as it massively helps us grow the show? Cheers, guys.